we all know that streaming services like Netflix and Amazon Prime and Hulu and things like that, well, maybe not Hulu, are growing.
Seriously?
Yeah, take that back.
In the next bed box that Jenna bit. Reviews the but, latest streaming service, Hulu.
Everyone, and welcome to Season 2, Episode 20 of Bad Voltage. You've got Stuart Langridge and I right now, and Jeremy is on the show, but is not present for the intro and the outro here, because he's currently at DockerCon in Copenhagen.
So very exciting time.
So kudos to our very tiny friend, because, you know, the time zones are a little difficult, and obviously there's lots going on in the evenings over there, and is at work with
well,
the
Well, yeah, dogs, he's so. Work, right?
Thanks to Jeremy for squeezing us in the nicest possible sense of the words. We are going to talk about a few things today, Mr. Langridge. What are we going to
yes.
talk about?
Well, as seems to be normality now, there's been loads and loads and loads of news going on. So yes. We've got a lot of quick hits, things that have happened which need mentioning. But yes. we wouldn't want to talk about them for half an hour, but lots and lots of stuff going on. So bump a yeah. news segment again.
Bumper. Double bumper. I like this, though. I quite enjoy doing the news, so it's all good. And we're also going to talk about the Purism phone. We actually covered this a little while back, the Purism Librem 5, I think it is.
Yes.
Which is their first phone, from what I can tell, but it's yes. the fifth one. So this is the privacy and security-focused phone, all running completely open-source software, a bunch of open hardware in there. It's really neat. We kind of poured a tiny amount of derision on this when we first heard about it, suggesting they would not hit their crowdfunding goal. And they have not just hit it, they've hit it early. They've more than hit it. So we're going to get into what's going on there as well.
How do we do this?
Are you going to do it? Yeah, you do it.
And now, Bad Voltage. It's not the same.
No, it's not the same,
is it?
Yeah, it's...
You
yeah.
give it a go. Go.
All right. And now... Bad Voltage. Is that better?
News!
Yes. News.
What news is there? I mean, again, I don't know whether there's just a lot going on at the moment generally in the tech world. But, you know, there have been times in the past when we've gone, well, what's going on in the news? And the answer is not very much, not being very exciting. But, like... Things happen all the time. They're all disastrously bad things normally, but things happen all the time.
No, they're not. God, Jesus, dude. Like, we've been recording now for less than a minute and you're already negative. The world is a decent place.
Okay, so let's describe how the world is a decent place by how every Wi-Fi device on the planet is broken.
That's less cool, I'll be honest with you.
As usual with these things, it's got a website and it's got a name and it's got an image and it's possibly been trademarked. But this is actually a semi-serious problem. It's the problem is actually with the four-way handshake. You can cause a wireless device with security to reuse its keys. But this is not actually, you know, an implementation bug. It's a bug in the plan, in the actual specification. And so, yeah. essentially, everyone is vulnerable to it. Now, in practice, Apple and Windows aren't massively vulnerable. They are a bit, but not too much, basically because they ignored that bit of the spec. Linux and Android devices are very vulnerable to it.
Right.
Now, everyone's pushed out patches. Ubuntu's certainly already been patched. Windows certainly already been patched. Android devices and all of the routers in the universe, on the other hand... More of a problem. When did you last upgrade the firmware in your router, for example?
I assume it just upgrades automatically.
Do you assume that?
I do. I do, in fact.
I have a Ubiquiti stuff, and I upgrade it pretty regularly.
Oh, yeah. If you're in that position where you've gone out and bought a special different router, then you're the sort of person who pays attention to this. But yeah, this is a pretty serious problem.
So,
go on.
Oh, no, go ahead.
Obviously, it's it allows someone to see what your wireless traffic is, which means that if you're using HTTPS websites or whatever, then it's not as much of a problem. If your connections are encrypted with SSL to wherever you're going, not too much of a problem. If you're on a VPN, not too much of a problem. But most people are not in that situation for most of their things.
Right.
Fortunately, the yeah. recent, the last year or couple of years, big push towards SSL, towards HTTPS on the web, means that most of the stuff where you're sharing a lot of private information tends now to be SSL. And I can hear parts of the audience laughing, mocking my assumption here, but there has been certainly a marked improvement in this. But we're nowhere near done. And this is potentially a pretty big issue. It's especially a big issue because this exactly highlights the problem with all the Android devices and certainly all of the IoT embedded things like routers and drones and whatever, which never, ever get updated.
So it's concerning for the kind of folks who most people, right, who have a router and they don't know what's in it, they don't care what's in it, they don't know what firmware is.
Right.
I mean, you'd like to think that people like Comcast will take care of that and make sure that that will be updated regularly and whatever else. But
yeah, it's an interesting bug though, because it's like really, really wide bug, but it's pretty shallow and somewhat difficult to exploit. So it's not as bad as it's first maybe seem on the surface, because obviously you need physical proximity and a lot of other factors. You have to be specifically targeted. Like, you can't war drive with this because you can only target one network at a time.
Yeah,
et cetera, et cetera. But it's interesting.
It is interesting that it's actually a spec bug. It's something they basically didn't think of. Now, Linux, as I understand it, and I'm not being a network engineer, I might have misunderstood this slightly, but Linux, Android are slightly more vulnerable to this than other things might be, because if you do this whole rekeying process, then it goes, oh, I don't know, have a key which is all zeros. Obviously not ideal. And again, patches are available, but I think what's more interesting about this is this sort of thing, this is exactly the same as things like Heartbleed were. What the big problem with it is not that the bug's been solved, it's how the bug gets out into the world. The bug fix gets out into the world, sorry. As far as I'm aware, there's no exploit code for this yet, but then I'm not particularly tied into the sort of people who would be busy exploiting it as we speak.
I'd be surprised if there's not an exploit somewhere, even if it's not public.
This also seems to be one of those cases where people are penalized for doing their homework. Like, if Linux implemented the spec in its fullest entirety and it affects that, then people are basically being penalized for doing the right thing.
It's not clear to me whether Apple and Microsoft didn't implement the spec because they saw this problem with it and then decided we're not going to do that because it would be stupid, but just never bothered to report it upstream, or they did report it upstream but nobody listened, or whether they just didn't implement it right and they have been saved by laziness. This is somewhat exacerbated by the fact that if you want to get hold of the wireless standards from the IEEE, you have to pay money for them, and quite a lot of money too.
I'm assuming that's what funds a chunk of the IEEE.
The flip side, though, is you don't actually know what the standards are, right?
Well, people do if you pay the money. But I'm not necessarily defending this. I'm just saying that, like, it's not like they're hidden in a box in the White House. Okay. So, also, I just want to note for the record, you know, there's all of those kind of like those somewhat laughable fake sex things. You know, I'm not going to give any examples to implicate anybody. The four-way handshake sounds like one of those, by the way.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
I had no idea what you were talking about.
Yes, I now have a sense of what you're talking about, and yes. Yes, it does, but yes. Next piece of news.
Just remember, kids, crack is indeed whack.
So I have two pieces of news, actually, which I wanted to touch on, both of which are fairly small, but I think they're interesting. So Google Maps is now allowing you to explore local planets and moons. So Google Maps and Google Earth more broadly, of course, is quite interesting. I mean, I don't know about you guys, but it's interesting to kind of like sit there and fiddle around with Google Earth. And, you know, my son, for example, who's five, like he loves kind of like poking around, and I'll show him like, you know, different parts of the world and stuff like that. And now they've actually included the heavenly bodies, Dione, I'm going to butcher all of these, Enceladus, Iapetus, Mimas, Rhea, and Titan, and the Jupiter moons Europa, Ganymede, and Io.
Nice.
Io. Yeah. So, and they've added dwarf planets, Pluto and Ceres, and full planets, Venus. So, yeah, you can basically kind of like zoom in, you can scan around, you can float around with it. I just think it's really cool. I think it's cool that Google does, like, this is in no way critical to Google's business, right? But I think it's cool that they do.
Have you ever used Google Sky Map? That's really, really cool as well. So you can point your phone at the sky, and it will tell you what stars are there, and like a 3D, you can shift it around, and it's really neat. I bet Jack would actually probably get a kick out of it.
That's pretty funky. Yeah, I love stuff like that.
Yeah, it's been around for quite a while. Yeah. The thing that always fascinates me about Google Maps, generally speaking, is the sheer number of people Google is willing to throw at a Maps product.
But it's key to so much else of what they do. You know,
yeah. I mean, but I think Apple thought, like, oh, that's easy, just Maps. Well, how difficult could it be? Like, right. Google employs thousands and thousands of people just to do Google Maps.
Yeah.
And I imagine what it must have been like in the earlier days of Google when somebody sat down and said, you know what we should do? Sat around a boardroom table. Let's map the entire world. So how are we going to do this? Well, we'll basically send out thousands of cars with cameras on the roof. Okay. And, you know, that, I mean, the investment in doing that, and obviously the satellite imagery and the rest of it, but the investment in doing that must have reaped numerous rewards for Google. But can you imagine pitching that? It's just mind-blowing.
It does stun me, the idea that someone would have sat in a meeting room and said, okay, here's my new plan. We should drive a car down every road on Earth. And someone went, well, no, that's not what we're going to do now. But yeah, I mean, and obviously there's lots of stuff in it, because originally I thought, God, that's a lot just to get Street View. But obviously they were doing things like mapping all the Wi-Fi networks that were there and so on and so forth. I'm assuming the Google Street View cars are festooned with monitoring devices and so on and so forth. I'm personally most looking forward to, presumably Enceladus has got loads of cheese sprinkled all over the top of it, so I'd quite like that.
I was going to make the same joke, by the way.
In amusing news, Microsoft have added support for Ogthio and OgVorbis to Windows. Thanks for that. I mean, a decade too late.
Is 2017 the year for that? Really?
It's the sort of thing where it would have been really handy if they'd done it 10 years ago and that would have been a voice in the fight. Now it's just like, oh, well, suppose we might as well add it then. Who cares? Now
that, do you think
now
they actually thought, lost. Like, now that there's no patents in MP3, we might as well just do this? Because now it legitimately just doesn't matter?
Well, a lot of games and things like that use OgVorbis, certainly, for sounds. Mono games and stuff like that. So I think that they went, fine, we might as well just bake it in because everyone's shipping libraries for it anyway for this sort of thing, and it doesn't harm us to do it. But presumably now there's no business objective. I mean, back then they said, oh, yeah, because we're not sure about patents and what have you. But I don't know whether it's connected to the MP3 patent thing or whether back then they, you know, the business decision was, we're not going to do this because it shows support for this kind of thing and we'd rather come up with a standard that we control.
I bet the reason why this happened is there was some commercial partner that needed it and they built it in and they just thought,
went,
whatever,
we'll just anymore, for God's sake.
Yeah,
that would not surprise me at all.
You know, I can't believe that someone at Microsoft was like, yeah, this is what we should devote
you know? engineering time to supporting OgTheora, you know, I mean, whatever. I think we talked before when the MP3 stuff finally came out of patent, how Fraunhofer were like, yeah, man, now we can move away from the old-fashioned MP3 and move on to AAC, which is still requires licenses. And you're like, you should be allowed to say this kind of horrible lie. But yes, well, you know, thanks, Microsoft. One single thumb up for that.
Yeah, well, you know, it's another step in the right direction.
Yeah. I'll go for one with a step in the wrong direction, or what I think is the wrong direction, because I didn't get a chance to look too closely. But as you know, I have an Essential phone, and they are already getting sued.
Yeah.
Which is, that didn't take very long, for the wireless connector. Yeah.
Really?
So it's Kisa, I guess you say it. It's KAYSSA, which is actually backed by Tony Fadell, who was the guy that founded Nest.
Yeah, I saw that.
So what is the lawsuit?
The idea is it's the connector that the external devices go on, right?
Oh, you cut out. Did you ask what the last one was? Yeah, so there's two magnetic dots on the back. It's wireless USB in effect. And they basically contend that they had a bunch of meetings previously for their specification that's slightly different from the one they went with. They didn't go with them, but stole some of the technology, was the summary.
This is the thing. I mean, really? We talked about when Jeremy reviewed the Essential Phone. We talked about how they try to build a world in which you've got lots of add-ons, things that you can sort of snap onto the top of your phone, and it's that connector that's
causing. Right. But it's not the actual physical connector; it's the wireless protocol bit of the connector. Yeah.
This is one of those things where I go, okay, one thing being sued by another, I don't know who is in the right.
And right. Oh, no idea.
Just shut up. The whole thing just makes me want to lie down until it goes away.
Yeah, I agree with you. It wouldn't be fair for us to pick sides. I hope that they figure this out, just because I love what Essential's doing, and I think we need more of that. And I feel like they've actually got a shot in building something despite the ludicrous flaws that are present in it, that seemingly obvious things.
Interestingly, I think they've built a really nice phone. Backwards and forwards with the Essential team, because I asked them, you know how the iPhone has got a notch cut out of the top as well?
Yeah.
But the screen goes right the way up to the top of that, and they've done a bunch of work so that if you're a web page, you can detect from CSS where the notch is, and so make your page flow around it or whatever. If you want to, you can. It is cool. Yeah. And I thought, I wonder if Essential's done the same thing. So I contacted a friend of mine who has an Essential, Jeremy Garcia, and I contacted Essential themselves, asked them a question. They said, send us a DM with the details, and I went backwards and forwards with them on a conversation. And basically, they've avoided the problem by, if you go full screen in a web page, then it just avoids their notch. Unfortunately, so the screen doesn't go right the way up to the top, slightly frustratingly. So they didn't have to deal with any of this by just going, yeah, you just don't get to use that bit of the screen. Sucks to be you, I guess.
Essential's in a weird spot because Apple obviously controls the whole stack, right, from hardware to software and everything in between. Where Essential wants to ship a as stock as possible Android, and they're the only phone with a notch. They're in a weird place. The more they modify Android, the longer their patches take, and they want to be a Nexus-like or Pixel-like experience in that regard. So they're in a weird position there, I think.
Yeah, what they obviously should have done was started a discussion about this as part of the web standards community and said, we propose this, and then had it hashed out in CSS and gone about it. What Apple did was they went, da-da, here it is, now let's talk about how we standardize it.
Right.
And Essential could have done the same thing, to be honest with you. I mean, everyone kind of expects that.
Yeah, they could have done that, and then 3 years later...
Well, the other difference there is Apple employs more people to buy paper plates for office parties than Essential employs... Full stop.
In total,
so it's just they're not in similar position in that regard.
Yes, I would agree.
You say that in jest, Jeremy. I bet that's
true. I'm only mildly facetious. It's probably pretty close.
Stone cold, absolutely the truth. But yeah, it is interesting if you're that sort of small phone manufacturer, how much you can afford to contribute these things, especially if you're leading the charge on it.
Right.
Yeah. So I have one more piece of news, which to me is interesting. It might not sound interesting in the news itself, but so basically in Q3, Netflix, the popular streaming service, added 5.3 million subscribers in one quarter. So that's 850,000 streaming subscribers in the US and 4.45 million overseas. In just a quarter, and what this told me was, I mean, we all know that streaming services like Netflix and Amazon Prime and Hulu and things like that, well, maybe not Hulu, are growing.
Seriously,
take that back.
In the next bad books, that genre bit. Reviews the but, latest streaming service, Hulu.
But just the sheer growth, and that's just Netflix, I think is mind-blowing. And just obviously this opens up all kinds of questions that we've already discussed before on the show around, how things relate to cable and regular TV and stuff like that. I was under the impression that Netflix were on a bit of a decline. I remember reading something a little while ago saying that it seemed like their numbers were going down a little bit, but you know, even on a little bit of a decline, they're still just killing it in terms of subscribers.
Their rate of increase slowed.
Yes.
So they were getting bigger, slower. But some of that is because they're starting to hit saturation point. I mean, who do you know hasn't got Netflix?
Yeah, exactly.
One of the interesting things, though, is some of the reason that the figure was larger overseas is because there's a lot of world outside the United States of America. But another one of the reasons is that Netflix... Shut up, you pair of provincial layabouts.
All right, Americans. What he said, that's not true. It's okay. America only exists, okay? And maybe Canada. Canada is the rest of the world.
You have to have someone to blame.
Netflix have subsumed a certain amount of other streaming services outside the US. So I'll give you an example. I've been watching Star Trek Discovery because I'm cool. Right? Inside.
No. Those two things, Star Trek Discovery and the word cool, cannot exist in the same sentence.
You have no idea. Man, fucking nerd. Man versus food on YouTube, so shut up.
I have seen Star Trek. I've not seen the new one because, it's not going to be any different. That's why. All Star Trek shows are basically the same with just different people, right? It's just
this I'm a fan of metal bands, so shut up. However,
metal is cool.
However, they don't all sound different, though, do they? Anyway, Discovery.
The stereotype of metal is not nerd, okay? The stereotype of Star Trek is nerd. The stereotype of metal is, mouthbreaker. I agree. Right, and that's not entirely unfair.
I'm happy to be a nerd. You can be a thug, no problem. But the point is, Discovery, right, in the US, is on CBS's new streaming channel. They create a whole thing, and then you have to subscribe to it to get Discovery, as I understand it. Right? Which means they've got a shed load of customers. But CBS doesn't exist outside the US, so outside the US, Discovery's on Netflix. Right. Oh. So, whereas inside the US, as far as I'm aware, I mean, I might be wrong about this, but I don't think if you've got Netflix ready, you don't get Discovery. Sucks to be you, I guess. Now, this is nice because there was certainly a point in the past in which Netflix US had a bunch of cool stuff and Netflix outside the US had no cool stuff. So it's good to see that kind of thing reversing because now your pathetically infighty television market could just all get gobbled up by Netflix and Amazon Prime outside the world, and I've got both.
We're at a weird transition point, though, where if you do want to be a cable cutter, it's really difficult, because before you basically paid one bill, and while the bill was, in my opinion, probably too high, you pretty much got everything you wanted, right? Where now, if you want to watch Man vs. Food and Game of Thrones and some sports and a couple other things, you have to subscribe to HBO Go and however you'd get Man vs. Food if it wasn't YouTube, if you wanted to watch new episodes. And, you'd have to subscribe to Netflix here and maybe Hulu or whatever. But you have to have eight different services now, and live sports are still not really figured out.
Yeah.
So I think the overall experience is worse. In the short term, but in a place that hopefully long term will be
better. There was absolutely a world in which cable cutters were all terribly smug about, you subscribe to all these different cable channels, that's stupid. I just have one thing and it's all fine and I'd have to have a relationship with them and it all arrived on my laptop and stuff. But now everyone's gone, well, I want a piece of that $8.99 a month, actually.
Exactly.
It's not all going to Netflix. And now, you've got to subscribe to those. You're spending more on it now than you were before.
You're not. You're not spending that much. But it's not far off, and it's getting higher.
That's because you don't watch any sports at all, though. Or Star Trek Discovery.
That's true. No, because I'm cool, as opposed to your bullshit sci-fi nonsense. By the way, one thing that surprises me about Netflix, I was actually thinking about this the other day. So we have Netflix and Amazon Prime. And through Amazon Prime, we have Showtime, HBO, and some Comedy Central thing. And something called BritBox, where you can get British shows in the US, which is cool. The thing that surprises me about Netflix is I think that we probably spend more time actually watching Amazon Prime these days because you can rent stuff, you can access other channels through it. And the thing that's missing for me is really just live TV. Like what the only thing I care about that I can't get with my cord-cutted solution with Netflix and Amazon Prime is news networks. Like, I'd like to be able to get CNN or whatever, because I like watching the news. I hate all the ads that they have and all of the side effects to the various drugs that they're selling on those ads. But that's the only thing I can't really get. I don't, you know, Erica watches HGTV. We can get that through, you know, through a Roku. But I can't get CNN. And I'm amazed that Amazon has stuck to the everything you get with us is completely free. You can't buy stuff. You can't rent stuff. Yeah, you can download it now. And Amazon have kind of dipped into that market. But Netflix have got the brand when it comes to streaming services. Like, I think a lot of people don't think of Amazon still as a place where you can get all these TV shows and whatever else.
No, I'm surprised how good Amazon Prime Video is, honestly.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. It's really good.
And I don't have your news problem because I've got the BBC.
And you can get that on your streaming.
Yeah, I play it, and there's an iPlayer app for Amazon Prime, and... I haven't even looked at Netflix, but yeah, no problem for me at all. I've got the best news.
What irritates me is I want to be able to pay my TV license in the UK and get UK content in the US.
Yeah, and I can kind annoying. Of see why they don't do it, because it'd be a total administrative nightmare. But
also, let's just dwell on just for a moment how fucking stupid it's the TV license in the UK is. Oh, yeah, because you're forced into it. If I own a television set, then I have to have this stupid
Only if you watch
license.
Live television, which you don't.
Right.
You don't watch live TV, so you wouldn't need a TV license. I mean, you might have to argue.
But at least it used to be the case that I couldn't own a TV set without having a TV
rubbish.
License.
That's never been the case. If you own a television set and just watch videos on it, you were fine. Your problem was proving that.
No, my friend at university got busted for owning it. He never watched TV ever. He only watched VHS
cassettes.
Because
there was a presumptive thing. This is like saying if you show up somewhere and you've got a kilo of cocaine, you go, no, it's for personal use. They're going to go, we don't care about your opinion. We believe you're a dealer regardless. This is the same. The assumption was if you had a television, you're using it to watch the live TV. That's no longer the case. If you try using iPlayer, it now says if you want to use the live TV stuff, you've got to have a TV license, go ahead and do it. But you can watch shows from yesterday or the day before or whatever, no problem.
I didn't know that.
That's good. All right, so another bumper news segment.
Redhead's going to probably cross $5 billion in revenue?
Five?
Yeah,
really?
That's what their current projections are. So they're doing...
nice.
They were the first $2 billion in revenue in June of 16. They're going to pass three, hopefully, this year, and then they're on their way to five in the near future, which is pretty impressive.
Hang on. The trend line is up. I mean, because I thought, didn't they only cost $2 billion quite recently?
Yeah.
Last year, like a year or two ago.
So
when you say they're on the way to $5 billion, that's not saying, yesterday I sold an ice cream, today I sold two ice creams, so eventually I'll hit $5 billion.
No. Run rate-wise, they're getting close is the point.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
No, $5 billion, nice. And this is all basically like server revenue, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think it's flat.
Listen, yeah, there's a whole bunch of people, listening to this now going, no, that's totally not what it is, but not just a server company.
It's all open shift, I'm sure.
Yeah, it's... I'm pretty sure that, much as I love the Fedora team, I'm pretty sure that Fedora's not driving that revenue.
$5 billion, nice. So
you two can have Xeyes in your desktop.
Kudos to them and the end of the bumper news segment.
So Purism, company who've done Linux laptops in the past, very big focus on freedom and so on, decided they were going to crowdsource a phone over the summer, and they wanted $1.5 million minimum, and they reached it just about a week ago. They hit 1.5 million. They're looking to ship developer kits next June or so, next summer. Looking to actually ship the devices early part of 2019, as I understand it, although that's, you know, modulo crowdsourcing campaigns. And lots of people have been talking about this. It seems like they're attempting to genuinely put their money where their mouth is as far as freedom goes. Like, the thing uses Core Boot. It's actually Linux. It's not Android. It's got hardware kill switches to so you can actually disconnect the camera and the wireless stuff rather than just software shut them down, which is a really good idea. And their big focus, their big push is it's for people who think that kind of thing's really important, right? You can kill the bass band. People who think I want to be able to turn off the radio on my phone with a hardware kill switch.
Right.
Yeah.
And
it's IP native, right?
Yeah. It's got a radio in it, so you can make, you know, phone calls to phones.
Yeah.
But yeah, they're big pushes for VoIP and so on and so forth. What do you chaps think of this as a plan?
I think it's cool. I have to say, I think we touched on this on a previous show.
Yeah.
And we were skeptical at best, if I recall correctly.
We were skeptical that it would even hit the fundraising goal.
Yeah, exactly. And I have to say, I mean, so just running through the I'm trying to get the specs of it, but it seems like website is
They're pretty reasonable specs. I mean, it's nothing to write home about, but it's roughly along the lines of contemporary phones. It's 5-inch display, 3 gigs of RAM, 32 gigs of storage. It's got an SD card slot. Front and back cameras. It's got a headphone jack. Hooray!
And it's a true convergence.
That's certainly the theory. So yeah, I mean, it's not any kind of unbelievably super spec'd flagship device, but it's roughly on par with other stuff you'll see in the market. So it's not some kind of ancient phone.
Right. Yeah. And the thing I like about this is, I mean, I like the fact, in the same way that with the Essential Phone, I applaud, you know, this kind of work. Like, you know, we should be having more stuff like this. I mean,
yep.
I mean, particularly in the current age of privacy and all the rest of it, I think it's neat that they've raised this amount of money. It clearly shows that there is, while it might be a small market, there's still a bit of a market out there for it. And, you know, the fact that it's based upon Debian and various upstream projects like GNOME, I think is good. So,
and things like Matrix, what they're doing for communications is Matrix, which is decentralized. So they're using existing stuff to do this, which is cool.
Right.
So I'm going to read this just so people who aren't familiar with this can get a sense of this, of the things that it can do that Apple and Google can't in terms of privacy, security, and freedom. And they've listed these as user controls device, trackers disabled by default, privacy protection by default, it doesn't track you, layered security protection, user controlled source code, runs Linux, and they say GNU/Linux, obviously, separates CPU from cellular baseband, IP native communications first, and decentralized communication by default. So this is not just, you know, I think when we say the word privacy, it's not just a bunch of the other shit that you get on phones switched off. Like, they've really gone to a fairly deep level with this.
Oh, this is designed to be secure by default and open by default everywhere it can be.
Yeah.
So this is an interesting thing about this. I imagine all three of us think that a high-quality phone that respects your privacy and is secure and is freedom-focused is obviously a good thing. I don't think many listeners would disagree with that, and I know for a fact that none of the three of us disagree with that. My question is, do you think there is any chance that this is a financially sustainable operation for the next, let's say, decade?
That's what I think is interesting. I mean, a lot of people are going, well, how's this going to break out into the market? People don't care about this. I'm like, no, they don't. But I honestly don't think that's what it's for. It's destined for the sorts of people who like this kind of thing. And the question is, can they be sustainable just targeting that market? And I would have thought, no, absolutely not. But then I never thought they'd raise anything like $1.5 million. They're now up to 1.7, nearly 1.8 million. And they've still got a week to go.
But when you talk about this tooling and stuff for designing a phone from the ground up, that's not a lot of money.
No, but they're not designing a phone from the ground up. The difference between this and, say, the Ubuntu Edge campaign was that that was designed to make a phone from scratch, which is why it's needed $32 million. This, they're going to use hardware that's already there, but
what hardware is there that has the baseband completely separated from the CPU? That's not off-the-shelf kit.
As I understand it, and I'm not exactly sure how they're managing this, but yes, it's not off-the-shelf kit, but it's not like they're designing the whole thing from ground upwards. So they are talking to manufacturers, but they, unless it's all bullshit, they do seem to be confident that they can actually provide this thing at scale.
Because at $599, I'm a little skeptical it'd be that high quality, just because you look at a phone like Essential, and they clearly made some design choices where they lack things that they would like, because I think they wanted to keep it to a certain price point. Even at their scale, they're at $799. $599 seems very aggressively priced for a high-quality phone that you're doing a lot of very, very, very low count and a lot of custom things.
That's the, I mean, that is the question. Can it be sustainable? I mean, this, they've obviously done it for this in the same way that Pebble did, for example. But then Pebble weren't financially sustainable.
Right.
And they made and they made $10 million. And they were.
I think there's a certain, irony is not the exact right word, but there, a lot of the companies we want to see succeed are almost destined to not.
Yeah.
Which is unfortunate, because the things we like, there's just not enough of us.
Don't have a big enough demographic. I mean, I probably wouldn't use this anyway because it doesn't run half the stuff that I actually want it to. But I like the fact that for people saying, I want something which, instead of teaching the world to want privacy, which is what I think the way forward is, the people are like, I already want it. I'm not interested in waiting till the rest of the world get it so every phone in the shops does it. I'm happy to go out and buy a device which does the stuff that I want today.
Right.
It's good that it exists in a way that it didn't before.
Oh, absolutely. I mean,
the only people doing it for you are things like the Black Phone and so on, but they were for corporate customers, people who are looking to do that kind of, which is important, but it's not serving the same market, the same demographic as this.
What's interesting to me about this as well is, you know, I mean, look, the iPhone, when the first version of the iPhone came out, that completely changed the game, right, in terms of how people thought about phones, and the second version of the iPhone in particular. So I think the notion of devices coming out that don't sell well, but they make the market rethink, I think is good. I would include both the Essential, and I think we all think that, the Essential and this in that. And I think they're going to struggle to make this a broader commercial success. But to your point, Ak, I don't think that's their intention. I think their intention is to create, frankly, they're going to not like the way I describe this, but essentially a working prototype that demonstrates, you know, a sellable working prototype that demonstrates a security and privacy focused phone that works well.
But before you go on, I kind of agree with that, but they're not really prototyping the technology, because other people probably wouldn't pick up the technology in the same way. They're prototyping the idea of it.
That's what I mean.
So it's not that you're saying, okay, we've trialed this technology and now larger phone manufacturers can pick it up and take it to the large market. It's being able to say, look, this many people want this thing. Maybe, as you say, it changes the direction. It moves the Overton window. Because before it was like, no one cares about this. You go, at least some people do, because look, maybe you can see some of that.
Yeah, the thing that worries me about this is the same thing that worries me about the majority of crowdfunding campaigns, and it's particularly applies here, which is where, you know, I think a lot of most people who run a crowdfunding campaign have never done it before, right? Have never built something, you know, with such high expectations within the money that's required here. And I think relatively few crowdfunding campaigns, and the Indiegogo and Kickstarter people may disagree here, and if they actually have data on this, I'd love to see it. It seems like most crowdfunding campaigns are late and probably go over budget. I think a lot of founders of crowdfunding campaigns kind of get a bit of a haircut when it comes to the money side of things. And what worries me about the Purism phone is that they say it here in the software in the software section on the page. The Librem 5 loves diversity, and they show the KDE and GNOME logos on there. I think they're going to need more focus than that. Like, if they're going to try and be all things to all people in the open source world, what worries me is that they're going to burn through that money quickly, and they're not going to release something that works well. I think what they need to do is they need to make a decision about what they're running on it. And sure, let other people build, you know, remixes and derivatives and all the rest of it, so people can run whatever they want on there, because this is going to be a pretty open phone.
Right.
But I think in terms of what they're shipping, and they may be doing this already, maybe I'm unfairly characterizing them, I think they may need to make a really tight decision on the stack that they deliver.
Yeah.
Because if they don't, they're just going to, it's going to be shoddy, and they get one go at this, right? They've raised this level of money, they've got into the press, their crowdfunding campaign page is running like dog shit right now because everybody's looking at it, and that's brilliant. And so they get one go to make this work. And if they do it well, then I think it'll be fantastic. But they have to get more focus on this. Otherwise, it's going to fail.
Especially since they're currently talking about it'll run basically everything. It'll run Sailfish, and it'll run Plasma Mobile, and it'll run Ubuntu Touch if the Ubiports team get in touch with them, and it'll run Pure OS, and they're going to do all of this in, 6 months.
Yeah. I was going to say, given both of your involvement with Ubuntu Phone, do you think from an engineering perspective that is in any way a reasonable time frame?
I think it is reasonable to build a thing if you're reasonably constrained in what it can do. Yes, I believe that's doable. Because they don't have the commercial desire. They don't have to spend a bunch of time building stuff in the hope that WhatsApp come along. Because they don't care. They're not pushing for that. And because they've got an audience who have a much more constrained set of applications they want to run. And they have an audience who, frankly, are a lot more technical. So you can say to them, it runs stock Linux. So if you want this thing and you can't currently have it, then okay. And you've got people who will probably be okay with spinning, with firing up a standard GTK app on the phone, which only works with a mouse, because they're not trying to make a mass market product.
Right.
Well, and the thing is here as well is, from what I can tell, so it's going to be running Pure OS. And from what I can tell, this was the operating system that's primarily designed for their laptops. And it's GNOME-based, and it's going to be running on Wayland. I think what got Ubuntu Phone wrapped up in knots was the fact that everything was pretty much built from scratch. So
yes,
obviously Mir and the display server, Unity had to be adapted into a phone format. And because of the convergence vision with Ubuntu as well, it wasn't like you could just design for the phone. It had to also support tablet and TV and whatever else. So I think if they're using off-the-shelf components like Wayland and GNOME 3, and they're using GTK, then I think they'll actually do well, because clearly this is a very community-centric project. I think they'll get a lot of people from upstream who'll be interested in participating. And I think they'll actually have a better shot at it than Ubuntu did, to Axe point. But
yes,
it's ambitious, and this is presuming they pick a specific set of things. I don't want to belabor the point.
Totally right, they do. I think they are much more likely to be successful at hitting the goal they have set for themselves than Ubuntu were hitting the goal they set for themselves.
That's fair.
Because Ubuntu were, the end goal of it was Android and iOS have gone away and we have won. Obviously that wasn't, the plan for phase one, but it was to be a genuine competitor in the worldwide market. This is it's not designed for that. And I think, as Jono said, they'd be happy if it never got beyond that relatively small group of people, as long as that's financially sustainable. Right. So they're never going to be a billion-dollar company. What I don't know is if this group is financially sustainable, and I am sceptical that it is.
Well, and the thing is as well is I'm curious to see, anyone can build a phone that's got a terminal on it, right? So you can build it. You can build a phone for a technical audience, and I think we've seen that before. We've seen mobile devices for years that have been interesting to the technical audience, like from Palm Pilots to that cute, the Zorus, the Sharp Zorus, years ago.
Yeah, I had a Sharp Zorus.
Yeah, and then there was the what were the Nokia N
N900.
Whatever it was. Yeah,
the N900 was technical. The N9 was not.
Right.
It was a beautiful mass market device of beauty. The fact that none of you plebs bought it is not Nokia's fault.
I had one.
Because it was given to you for nothing.
That's exactly why I had
one. But yes, now I do absolutely take your point here. There is... Now, I'm kind of retailing a conspiracy theory a bit here.
Okay.
But I'm not the only one to do this. Alan Pope, friend of the show. Has been plotting graphs of the progress of the crowdfunding campaign. And it's weird. Crowdfunding stuff tends to be sort of bursty at the beginning and then it plateaus for a bit and then bursty at the end and so on. And with this, they basically had, zero at the beginning of the graph and the target at the end of the graph, and it's essentially a straight line. And that's unusual. Now, I mean, this is nothing more than outright speculation, but it does seem a bit like maybe the money that was coming in was sort of poked a little bit by external forces or something.
As in, just, like, someone came in and chucked a load of cash in there?
But instead of chucking
a load...
Well,
no, but they didn't chuck a load in, because that would be a spike. He's saying
but
they very...
that's the point. Maybe they chucked in a load of cash. Yeah. So
if maybe they had donation matching.
Well, if that was the case, if someone did chuck in a load of cash, it's... I mean, this is... and this may be incredibly unfair to the Purism people, right? But you can see someone saying, hey, well, if someone's going to donate us a big chunk of cash, instead of just having a big spike in the graph, we'd like to dribble it in bit by bit so it looks like we're getting nice progress towards the goal.
Right.
Right, and that may be completely inaccurate. I'm sure they vociferously deny this was the case. And this is just based on the graph. The graph looks a bit too smooth and therefore a bit too good to be true. Maybe it's...
It's weird because, with crowdfunding, you usually get a bump at the middle, then it's dead in the middle.
But,
a bump at the beginning, it's dead in the middle,
and then a bump,
and then a bump at the end.
And this is absolutely not like that.
Interesting.
That is interesting.
Huh. Yeah. but again, this could be completely unfair. Maybe it's just an unusual crowdfunding. I have actually seen, speaking for myself personally, I've seen awareness of it grow quite organically.
Right.
You know, I mean, it's been talked about on a bunch of big media places. You know, this is not just like on Pharonix, right?
No, it has been in quite a few places.
Actual big tech sites and so on are talking about this kind of thing. You know, it's been on Engadget and what have you. So we are seeing that kind of growth happen. So maybe it's just fine.
So switching gears a little bit. I know Jeremy has to sadly take off at some point soon. Jeremy, when you do need to, Jeremy's at a conference. Which conference are you at, Jeremy?
DockerCon.
Yep.
So in lovely Copenhagen.
In Copenhagen, my wife is there as well, somewhere.
I actually recently saw her.
You did?
I did.
Good.
Copenhagen's nice. Good expensive beer.
Yeah, that sums it up quite well, actually.
And Lego, and that's literally all I remember about the place.
So, switching gears a little bit, the Librem 5 phone is not going to be shipping Android, and obviously not shipping iOS. And therefore, from what I understand, it will not ship Android apps. You won't be able to run Android apps.
Now they have talked about some kind of insanely nutty stretch goal, where they said. Something like, yeah, we'll do that if we raise $10 million or something.
So the thing about running Android apps, and I'm assuming they were going to do it the same way that Ubuntu was going to do it, it's getting more and more difficult as Google shoves more and more into Google Play services.
Play services,
It went from a goal that was reasonable in Android 4 to nearly impossible in Oreo, realistically.
Right. Yes. And again, we've talked about this a lot in the past about how it's probably not a good idea.
Yeah.
Arguably. Well, I don't think it's a good idea. Jono's on the fence about it.
I mean, do you think that Linux having Wine has in any way, shape, or form over the years helped it?
No.
From an adoption perspective?
No.
I think we're talking about two different things, though. I mean, Wine is... I mean, Wine is... I think Wine on the desktop is different to Android apps running on a different handset. Like, I just think it's a different kind of thing. But I share the point that if you run if they get Android apps running on here, it's a hack, right? And some of them are not going to work. Some of them will work. And like you say, Jeremy, everything is so tied into Play services that it's going to be very, very difficult. And I think the big question we had at Canonical when we were talking about this was, if we ship Android apps on the Ubuntu phone, first of all, the user interface will be massively inconsistent, which is going to be poor. And secondly, there's kind of an assumption when it comes to Android, when you think of Android apps, that by definition includes all of the Google services. It includes Google Maps and Calendar and Accounts and all the rest of it. That a lot of that stuff just wouldn't work.
Yeah, I mean, so, not entirely. If you decide to use FDroid as your app store rather than the Google Play app store, then most of the apps in there are deliberately built because they assume they're going to be in an environment where that sort of stuff might not be available. So there are like stubs. Right. There are stubs for the Google Play stuff so that your app doesn't crash if they're not there, but they won't necessarily just blithely assume that Play services and so on are available. But those are rare. But again, doesn't necessarily matter, because if Purism decided we're going to ship Android apps, and yeah, they said a stretch goal of 10 million to run Android applications in isolation on the Librem 5. They would presumably be doing it in a very F-droidy sort of a way, right? They're not going to give you access to the Play Store. And the assumption is that the Netflix app is not going to work. But then they go, that's not what we're for.
So, but it seems, what I'd like to get you guys' opinion on here is the outline here. Purism's Librem 5 phone will be able to run HTML5 applications, which means common applications you use every day will be available through the web browser. Purism will be able to isolate these applications from the OS, so the applications will not be able to have visibility into other running applications or have access to areas that you don't allow. And they list here things like YouTube and Instagram, BBC News, you know, New York Times, HSBC, Wells Fargo, things like that. Now, the thing I'm curious about is, it seems like I think we'd all agree that that in a perfect world, all mobile apps would be basically just HTML5 apps, right? Because everybody can access them from wherever you need. And yep. And they're running on the web. The reality is that most people don't use HTML5 apps. They just use the native apps. And maybe the native app is just a web view with the HTML5 thing bundled in it.
Yeah.
But one thing I think we've all learned, and we say this all the time when we discuss these new phones, is people buy phones because of the applications, mm-hmm. because they can run the shit that they want. And what worries me here is I think you're going to get this interesting, like if they basically ship Pure OS and HTML5 apps, you're going to get a similar situation they had with Ubuntu, which is where you get these really beautiful native apps that work really nicely, and then you get these shitty HTML5 apps. You know, so when you see an icon on your desktop on your phone or on your desktop in the Ubuntu world, and it's got a logo that you think, oh, that's what I want. I want Angry Birds, or I want Wells Fargo, whatever it might be. What you end up getting is just a web view with some crappy web experience that's built into it.
But I really don't think that's a problem for their audience. It's a problem for a mass market audience.
Well, this was going to be my next point, is that this presumes that people who care about privacy don't want those apps or don't care as much about those apps. I don't believe that's the case.
No, I think what the Purism people think is that people who currently, right now, this moment, care about privacy enough that they're prepared to buy a phone focused entirely towards it are also prepared to give up on having a bunch of that stuff. I want to see, this is why I think it's solving the wrong problem, right? Because I want to see the needle move so it responds to the fact that normal people think this stuff is creepy and weird and increasingly don't like it. This does not serve them at all, but hopefully it moves the needle 1/19th of an inch in the direction of there is a market for this. The big downside of it would obviously be that large manufacturers look at this and go, well, we don't have to deal with this now because the only people who care about this are nutters. It's not actually moving the Overton window.
The thing that worries me here is, and we should call the show Overton Window. That's the second reference, by the way. So the thing that worries me here is that they're designing something here that can't, that I think is the goal, from what I can tell, is that it doesn't just appeal to privacy nutters, right? It appeals to...
I don't agree with you. I think that's exactly what it appeals to.
But I think what they're trying to do, whether they actually accomplish this or not is a separate question. I think what they're trying to do is to build a handset that has got privacy baked into it, but also offers a good experience in terms of what people want to use phones for.
Right.
And I think that's a noble goal, and I think that's the only way in which we're going to get privacy into the mindset of the populace is this notion that, well, you fundamentally have to compromise to have, you know, a decent level of privacy. There's always going to be some kind of compromise, of course, but it's got to be as non-noticeable as possible for the general populace to accept it, right? And I think what they're doing here is they're focusing on these HTML5 apps. What worries me is, yes, the privacy nutters will go out and buy this immediately. They would have put the money down on day one, right? But I think there is a large proportion of people. My father-in-law is probably a good example of this. I think Joe would look at something like this and think, yeah, I'm concerned about my privacy. I don't like this. He's not a technical guy at all. But he'd be interested in this because he is concerned about privacy, but is not willing to not be able to access the services or the applications that he needs every day.
I think that there
and
is,
where you draw that line is the big question. Yeah, and that's what excites me about this. I think they're trying to draw the line in a place where, you know, what was that? You like the Open Moco, those kinds of phones, you know, these tech curiosities where they didn't strike the line.
I think it's reasonable to say we're focused towards basically people who care about privacy above all else, but there's no reason why those people can't have a good user experience too, because they will value that as well.
Exactly, yeah.
Well, I think in many places, though, security and privacy are almost diametrically opposed to usability, and that's just the trade-off that's there.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'd agree with that. I mean, you could certainly, you know, attempt to swim down the middle, but... And this is what John was saying about compromise, I think, that... If you go into it saying, I'm really concerned about my privacy, and so I want a device which respects that and cares for it, and they say, but I can't buy the Purism because I can only chat to people on Matrix and my friends are all on Facebook Messenger, there's literally no way of squaring that circle.
Right?
No. Yeah. Yeah, that's the thing. I'm actually surprised that there's not been more pushback over the years from... app developers and like big ISVs, like games, people who build games and stuff like that, to focus more on HTML5, because I imagine it's just an absolute pain in the ass building these different games for these different platforms. I guess they're probably just a different Unity build target, and it's
in the modern world, this is if you're building a game, you're doing it with Unity or something. Well, this is why things like React Native or Marmalade or whatever. Exists Mono, Xamarin.
Yeah.
This is why all these essentially cross-platform frameworks exist, precisely to avoid that problem.
Yeah. Huh. Interesting. So I think we're obviously all on board. Like, we think it's cool. I might actually go and plonk some money down. You know? I don't think I'm going to...
The least concerned with security or privacy among us... Plunking down for the super security piece.
I think he's going to buy it just so he can write an app for it which films his living room and then ships it out to the internet.
I care about security. I just, you know, everyone draws their line where they're, you know, because security convenience, everyone draws their line in different
places. You just
draw
your line where everyone can see it.
My line is streamed to the internet. But, you know, they have, just for people who are interested in this, actually, because, you know, we should do them a bit of a favor. $20. You know, you get your name listed on the backer page. $100, get listed on the original backer page and get a T-shirt.
Ooh.
Most expensive T-shirt you'll ever buy. $299 developer kit includes a screen, touchscreen, development mainboard, cabling, power supply, and various sensors. Free worldwide shipping. That's quite cool, I think.
For the developer kit.
Yeah,
I might get that.
I mean, bear in mind that's not a phone.
No,
that's a bunch of components in a box.
Yeah, it's a pizza box.
Yes.
$600, Libre M5 phone, including phone and charger. They've had 2,242 backers so far.
Yeah.
Which is cool. $1,399, this is all dollars. Libre M5 phone with a compatible 24-inch monitor, keyboard, and mouse. Okay. Just go to Costco and buy.
I could say, that does seem like a lot of money for... I mean, you're spending $600 on the phone, or you can spend $1,400. That's an extra $800, for which you get a 24-inch monitor, which are presumably like $129 at Best Buy.
Right.
And a keyboard and a mouse.
Right, yeah. But, you know, it good for them. Good for them. 21 people have done that one. $16.99, Libre M5 phone with a compatible 30-inch monitor.
Now, they are not cheap. I'm not sure they're that expensive, but they're not cheap.
The 30 backers. $10,000.
But then you get 10 phones.
Enterprise bundle, 10 phones, one-year support contract, extended three-year warranty.
See, if you actually want 10 phones for your organization, that's not a bad deal.
Two backers. Now, I'm willing to bet you that's two rich people who did that. It's not companies. 18,000 enterprise bundle, 10 Librem 5 phones, 1 year support contract, 3 year warranty with 10 compatible 24-inch monitors, keyboards, and mice. Six backers. Six people have spent 18 grand on this. Jesus Christ.
And for 20,000, you can get the 30-inch one. Which is lovely.
Seven backers
for that. So, yeah, I mean, if you are interested in this, if you've heard this and gone, I like the sound of this and I want it, you have not got long. The crowdfunding campaign ends about 4 days from when this show comes out.
Yeah.
So you need to get on it. Just go to Purism, PURI.SM.
Yeah, and the link's in there. And I'm of the view, I do this, and I think you do this as well, Ak, is I will happily give money to organizations where I won't actually use the thing, but I support what they're doing.
Because they're doing the right thing, yes.
Yeah, like I've given money to the Free Software Foundation, and I actually quite disagree with a lot of the stuff that they're doing. But we need them in the world, and they help bring balance to the force. So yeah, so good work, Purism. We approve. I'm excited to see what happens. I might go and plonk my $600 down and get one of these things, and then use it once and put it in the drawer.
So. But we shall see. I mean, we applaud them. They made their funding goal. We were skeptical and we were wrong.
Yes. So that was good. We were.
Now we shall see. Can you make a real business from it?
Yeah, so there we go.
End of the show.
End of the show.
Jezza has fled to entertain people about Docker, whatever that is.
Walking around with a T-shirt with a cartoon dog on it. That's a career now.
You are a fine one to talk, Baconionio. I have an actual question for people, though. A couple of times recently, I found myself... where I've been travelling or I've needed to go somewhere for a day and I've had I'll have a couple of hours spare. I thought I could get some writing done. Not work.
But like somewhere where
an article or a blog post or just some stuff that I'm writing. But I don't really want to take a laptop and carry it around with me and all that kind of thing, so I don't have a bag. I don't normally carry a bag around with me. And I've thought to myself, on a couple of these occasions, I'll tell you what would be handy is if I had like one of them little folding Bluetooth keyboards that fits in my pocket, and then I could just leave it in my jacket pocket. And then when I needed to type somewhere, I could just sit there, unfold it, and use my phone. Right? I don't like writing long form pieces with a touchscreen keyboard. It's too slow. It breaks my flow, my mental writing too much.
It also breaks your spirit. That's the most annoying thing in the world, is typing anything longer than a small paragraph on a touchscreen phone.
Yeah, it's really slow. And looking into it a bit, there's a whole bunch of, small Bluetooth keyboards, but they're not small. They're small in that they'll fit in your laptop bag, but they won't fit in your coat pocket. But there are some of the ones that fold up and so on, and some of them seem okay. But I don't know which ones are good and which ones aren't, and you don't want to rely on Amazon views for this kind of thing. And some of them are super cheap. They're like 15 quid. And some of them are 150 or whatever, which seems like a lot of money for a keyboard to me. So...
yeah.
What I'm interested in here is people's views. Anyone who does this or has this kind of thing, I don't even know what I should be looking for. I mean, are full-size keys important? Is key travel important? Should it be a chiclet keyboard? Do I need one of them ones that has a little stand that your phone fits in? How long do I need to care about how long they stay charged for? What? My overriding requirement is it'll fit in an inside jacket pocket. Right, so it's got.
Oh, so you want something really small?
Yeah, so it's got to fold into three or something. Yeah, it's got to be something.
What about fitting into your bag? I mean,
no, because that's the point. I haven't got a bag. If I had a bag, if I was carrying a bag somewhere, it'd have my laptop in it.
You're the only person who walks around, like goes to an event with a conference, doesn't have a backpack.
No, I'm not talking about going to an event. Although I don't like taking a backpack around even at events. But I'm not talking about events. I'm talking about I'm going somewhere and I'm going to be on the train for 2 hours. But I'm not going anywhere where I need my laptop at the far end.
I would, even if I was getting on a train, I take my bag everywhere.
No, I absolutely don't hate it. I don't like carrying stuff around because I don't need to use it at the far end, right? This is why I thought, I mean, maybe this is unusual.
Why do you carry everything else?
What everything else do I need?
I don't know. Headphones.
Inside pocket, my jacket.
So, like, well, so you must have in-ear headphones.
Yes.
Right, no. So, first of all, fuck in-ear headphones. They're terrible, okay? Proper headphones. The way sound waves work. Okay.
I am more than happy if I'm sitting in a recording studio doing an album to wear big cans. right? If I'm on the train, in headphones are fine.
You're wearing big cans right now.
Because I'm recording a show, fool. Plus, these are the ones that happen to be on my desk.
But the thing is that you get better audio quality. Like, life is too short for crap audio, okay?
It just, whatever, dude. Okay.
You know how you like nice looking, you know, desktop units?
Yeah.
Like, I believe you once said, life is too short for ugly computers, right? Right, life is too short for shit audio. But what about things like, you know, if you want to carry, I don't know, headache tablets, indigestion tablets.
No, this is not if I'm going
your away. Your car keys, you know. Yeah, but
stuff like that. If I'm going away, I mean, part of the reason I thought about it, I was away seeing some friends for a few days.
Right.
So I went down to the Cotswolds and we went to the Rollright Stones, which was very cool, and, you know, visited a number of pubs. But I wasn't doing any work. I was on holiday. I didn't take my laptop with me.
Well, I take my bag anyway.
No, but that's the point. I mean, I wouldn't have my laptop. I wouldn't want to keep a keyboard in it. And even if I was going out for the day, because there were a couple of hours during which they went off to pick up their new dog, actually. And I thought, you know, I might end up sitting in a cafe or something. But I don't want to carry a laptop around with me or a big keyboard the whole day just for that. I just want a little keyboard that just fits in the inside pocket of my jacket.
I used to have this keyboard. It was not Bluetooth, but I'm sure you can get Bluetooth versions of it. And it was basically like a little. It was about the size of a Kindle.
Yeah.
You know, maybe a little bit bigger. It was like a little, and it was mechanical keys.
Yep.
And it felt like typing on a normal keyboard. I've had those foldable Bluetooth ones before, and they always have those crappy little kind of like keys that where you don't get any.
No travel in them. I mean, I am less of a nutter about keyboards than a lot of people. The keyboard I'm currently using, I think, came free with an Acer Aspire Revo, right? So all these people going, oh no, I must have a Model M and it must have clicky keys and it must have mechanical switches.
Right.
I'm not that bothered. So I'm a lot more tolerant of this than a lot of people. But, I mean, basically, this is the question. How important is this stuff? If you get a folding keyboard that fits into your inside jacket pocket, is it like typing on a ZX81 or worse, like typing on a touchscreen, at which point I'm no better off? This is why I don't want one of these projection ones or anything like that.
No, those things are stupid.
They are stupid. I hate them.
And they seem like a great idea, but no.
No.
They're
because you
ludicrous.
Think if I got one of these, it'd be like Minority Report, and it's not. Right. It's like playing the drums. But just on the bottom of a bucket. I hate them.
So like that Metallica album. So,
like all of the Metallica albums after the Black album. But I'm interested in people's views on this. People who've done this. What even should I care about? I'm happy to hear product recommendations, but more importantly, what should I even be looking for?
And it would be quite cool if people could post pictures of their keyboards to the to community.badvoltage.org, because I'd be curious as well. Like, and you know, I know you want to look for it, obviously. But the thing that bugs me about those foldable keyboards is that they're so small. I feel like I'm typing like my fingers. You know,
this is the thing. I mean, you can get
and
ones.
You like small phones, right?
Yes.
So you're probably less concerned.
I'm a bit less concerned, but equally, I don't want a thumb keyboard. Right. I want something where I can actually type on it like a keyboard. But I don't know whether that means, does it have to be full size? I mean, a lot of the ones I've seen unfold, if you took an actual keyboard and folded it in three, I don't think it would fit in my jacket pocket. So they probably need to be smaller, but could they be, you know, just a bit smaller and be okay? I don't know. And it's hard to find these things in shops. Right? I've been to a couple of the shops here in the city. And they're like, oh, yeah, we've got one, or we haven't got any, or something. You can get them all on Amazon or whatever, no problem. But I can't try them out there, which is why I'm soliciting people's opinion.
How big is your jacket pocket?
I know, size of a jacket pocket. Aren't they standard?
Well, if you have a little jacket, like, you know, like if you've got a big kind of loose jacket, the pockets are actually quite big, aren't they? Whereas if you have like a smaller, like tightly fit jacket,
I've got things like, I've got a little notebook in there. Stuff like that. So there's a certain amount of room. Right? This is not one.
There's a reasonable amount of room.
Yeah.
It's not like a jean pocket.
No.
Okay. All right.
So interested in people's views.
People, you have a mission now. Go and share your thoughts on community.badvoltage.org. One other tiny thing, I probably should have said this in the intro. You're probably going to be noticing that the audio sounds a little different. It's going to sound a little different for me, and it did for Jeremy this week. So Jeremy obviously is in Copenhagen. Last week, I'm moving house, and I basically packed up all of my gear, so I'm using different equipment for recording. Last week, I actually accidentally recorded from the mic in the laptop, which is why it sounded crap. So it should sound better this week. But we you know, if any of you find this a little difficult to listen to, or you know, just let me know and I can get it fixed.
You will remember, people who've been listening to the show a while, and one chap actually emailed us to say he's been listening since the beginning, and he misses Shot of Jack. We can say this now, Jeremy's not here. So thank you very much, Uwe, for saying that. We appreciate that. But people who've been listening for a while, remember that one time in the past, I accidentally recorded and didn't switch the audio sources, so I was recording from the microphone on my webcam, and I received the most thunderous bollocking manners ever seen, and Bacon just thinks he can get away with it, just as incompetent as I am. Maybe you're not allowed to do the audio either. We have to get Jeremy to do it.
It's true. One rule for me, one rule for other people, and I'm okay with that. That works for me. One other thing that somebody wrote in about, which I just want to tend to really quickly, is we touched on somebody trying to buy community.badvoltage.org, and we said we were going to read it out, but we actually didn't. So we had an email from, I'm not going to say who this was from. But it said, someone sent an email to show up at badvoltage.org saying, "Dear owner of community.badvoltage.org, we are a marketing group looking to purchase a website in the crypto niche."
To be clear here, by the way, there's not people trying to buy badvoltage.org. They're not trying to buy the show. They're just trying to buy the discussion forum.
Just the forum. So we're a marketing group looking to purchase a website in the crypto niche with good SEO value, traffic, and potentially customers. If your budget for the sale of your website is under $100,000 US, please reply to this email.
This is one of the nice things, right? Jono responded to this because I had...
One final thing. He says here as well, disclaimer, note, we are not spammers. We found your email through manual efforts. We are sorry if you got our email two or three times. You can reply with remove, so we'll delete your email from the list.
Yeah.
Sounds legit.
It does rather. I mean, it's nice because Jono responded to this. I had the rather unworthy thought that we could just move the forum to community2.badvoltage.org and trouser the 100 grand. But Mr. Yeah. Bacon, always there as a fierce defender of our community and its rights, decided to take the piss out of the guy instead. And he did so thus wise.
Yeah, I basically replied and said, we would consider selling community.badvoltage.org for $30 million plus three boxes of Space Raiders. So for those of you who don't know what Space Raiders are, they're basically a delicious snack from the 80s in England.
They are, and they came in like tomato sauce flavour and things like that. They were great.
Yeah, and I was like, would that work? So far, no response. So I'm guessing that our offer fell on deaf ears. I might actually follow up with them. I'm going to do that now.
You put it in your CRM system. I'm reasonably confident that it's the Space Raiders that broke the deal. So are you speaking anywhere in the next couple of weeks?
Next week I'm going to be flying, well, I'm going to be going to Prague to speak at the Open Source Summit in Prague.
As is Jeremy. And,
Jeremy will also be there. So I'm running a little conference track
and
as part of that.
And those of you who are going, who might be going, you might want to keep an eye on Jeremy's thing because it could be interesting.
Oh, is this the topic shall be discussed?
I know something you don't, listeners. Yes.
Is it still got the same name, by the way?
No.
Bollocks. Okay.
What are you talking about?
I'm going to be doing one of the keynotes, and I think I'm going to talk about incentives in that. And then I'm doing another talk. I can't remember what it is.
Oh, good effort.
In the main track. But I'm running a conference as part of the Open Source Summit that's going to be one of the conference tracks. So
nice.
So Jeremy's speaking in that, and Alana's as well, and a bunch of other people. Yeah, so looking forward. It's going to be cool.
That's pretty cool. I am Friday, which is the day after this show comes out. I'm keynoting Hackfronts, which is here in Birmingham. It's a one-day conference, two-day hackathon. And talking about privacy and so on, which is, you know, relevant to the Purism phone thing, which is what put it in my head. So that should be fun. And thank you, Michael Moore, for the invitation. And we should see how it goes.
Is it going to be videoed?
I believe so, but I'm not sure. If it is, then I'll keep. I'll post a link on Twitter or keep it on my website or whatever.
Stick it on the forum or something.
Yep.
Will Excellent.
Do. Okay, so right. that was the show.
I have nothing else. Yes, that was the show. Thank you for listening, everybody. As usual, community.badvoltage.org. Go and let us know what you think, and we will be back in a few weeks.
Yes, follow us on...
Bye-bye.
Follow us at twitter.com/badvoltage, what you should do, I believe.
Yes, 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 indeed. Go there as well. Go there as well.